From the New Hampshire Institute of Politics at St. Anselm College, this is the Candidate Forum on Business and the Economy, sponsored by Lincoln Financial Group, produced in partnership with the Business and Industry Association of New Hampshire, New Hampshire Union Leader, New Hampshire Public Radio, and New Hampshire Public Television.
Everyone, and welcome to the Candidate Forum on Business and the Economy. I'm Laura Kanoy, host of The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio. We're coming to you from the television studios at the New Hampshire Institute of Politics at St. Anselm College and Political Library. For the next hour, we'll hear from New Hampshire's gubernatorial candidates. We will press them to talk about what they would do as governor and refrain from spending valuable time attacking each other. And now let me introduce our candidates. They are Republican Ovid Lamontagne and Democrat Maggie Hassan. Our panelists are Phil Vaughn from New Hampshire Public Television and Mike Cody from the New Hampshire Union Leader. During the first half of our forum, the panelists will ask questions. Then we'll move on to a lightning round where candidates will provide brief and decisive responses to a series of topics. Then I'll take over and moderate a two-way discussion between the candidates. Some of these questions came from our listeners, readers, and viewers. Each candidate will have 2 minutes for a response, and if there's a follow-up question, 1 minute for that. Now, we tossed a coin earlier to see who would receive the first question, and that goes to Maggie Hassan. And our panel, we begin with Mike Cody from the Union Leader. Mike?
Good morning, Ms. Hassan.
Good morning.
What do you see as the largest economic policy differences between you and Mr. Lamontagne?
Well, first of all, it's really great to be here, and I just want to thank our hosts and sponsors for having us this morning. It's really important that we have a strong and competitive economy, and that, of course, starts with opposing an income or sales tax. I want to focus on making sure that our businesses can innovate and create jobs, and that starts with making sure that we have targeted tax credits like the Research and Development Tax Credit. It starts with making sure that we're providing technical assistance to our businesses, using, for instance, the expertise of our university system to give that kind of technical assistance. And it starts with investing in education again and making sure our education system is meeting the needs of the 21st century economy. I should also add that it's really important, as we think about strengthening our economy, that we defend the civil liberties and rights of every New Hampshire citizen, because we want to attract people of talent and energy to our state. So that means defending our marriage equality law and making sure that women can chart their own destiny by making their own health care decisions.
A lot of the public debate between you and Mr. Lamontagne so far has been on social issues. Now, any of the social issues that you disagree on, how much impact do they have on the government, on the economy, and the business of New Hampshire?
Well, you know, I was on a plane last spring, and I sat next to a young man who recruits for a major New Hampshire business. And he was telling me how important the marriage equality law that we passed was to his recruiting efforts, because young people were more interested in coming to New Hampshire to work here because we were committed to treating all of our Granite Staters equally. Similarly, for women, the ability to make their own decisions about when to have families, about what kind of balance they want to seek in the workplace, finishing school, all of those things relate to their ability to control their own health decisions and control their own destiny. So I think they're intertwined and very, very important to the future of our state.
Can you clarify a little bit more about your economic policy differences?
Well, sure. I have an innovation plan that's been up for a while, and it really talks about, among other things, the importance of improving standards in our schools at all levels, particularly science and math standards, because we need to make sure that our young people are not only getting a good education in those areas, but have hand-on curriculum. It also means that we want to invest in the university, begin restoring those cuts that this legislature made, but in exchange for that, freezing tuition at the university system and also making sure that the university system is holding more slots open for New Hampshire residents so our middle-class families can afford to stay here and our kids will stay here and become the next generation of talent for our economy.
Mr. Lamontagne.
Good morning.
Tell me about your economic policy differences with Ms. Hassan.
Well, thank you very much, first of all, for New Hampshire Public Radio, New Hampshire Public Television, Union Leader, and the BIA for sponsoring this first debate of this general election cycle. And I'm grateful for the opportunity to speak to New Hampshire voters across our state and these various media. I think the policy differences are fundamental and they're vast when it comes to jobs and the economy and reforming state government. And that's what's on the forefront of most people's minds around the state. I've campaigned from Wentworth location to Keene all the way over to, you know, Portsmouth and everywhere in between. And the resounding word is that we need jobs, we need a sound economy. And my plan, it's called the Prosperity Agenda on our website, Ovid2012.com, stands in stark contrast to my opponent's record. And my opponent was actually the majority leader for the Democrat-controlled Senate and oversaw spending increases way beyond the cost of living, supported 99 tax and fee increases in her time, including an income tax on small businesses called an LLC tax. My tax reform plan actually has components to it that she opposed as a state senator, things like extending the BET credit and so forth. So mine is very comprehensive. It's business-oriented. I'm a business owner. I've been a business lawyer. I've worked as chairman of the board at St. Mary's Bank. I have a lot of experience that's pro-business, and our policies differ quite dramatically.
And let me just jump in here, if I could, Mr. LaMontagne. You mentioned that Ms. Hassan was majority leader while, as you said, the Democrats spent way beyond the cost of living. I want to give you a chance to respond to that 30 seconds, and then Mr. LaMontagne, back to you as well for 30 seconds. Go ahead, Ms. Hassan.
Sure. I'm very proud of the record that we put together working with Governor Lynch, where I actually balanced the budget in the worst economy since the Great Depression. We made very tough decisions. But, you know, if we overspent to the degree that Ovid says we did, why did it take this legislature slashing the university system by half, cutting funding for hospitals by $100 million to balance the budget? There's no support for the notion that we overspent. And in fact, we were the first legislature to actually cut general fund spending in literally decades of New Hampshire governors, Republicans and Democrats. So I just think that's without foundation. What Ovid doesn't tell us about his agenda is what it will do to our essential infrastructure. There's a cost to it.
And we'll definitely get into that this hour. And Mr. LaMontagne, as you know, there's big differences of opinion and interpretation on the budget, the status of the numbers, how you interpret them, but I want to give you 30 seconds on that, and then I'll go back to you, Mike Cody. Go ahead.
Well, reforming state government begins with reforming our budgeting process. So our legislature reduced spending by 11%, plugged a $900 million hole that was left by the prior legislature, headed by Senator Hassan as majority leader. And it took reasonable, real math, not new math, estimates of revenues that are very close to where we are. So we've dealt with a significant problem, and we need leadership for a change in the governor's office, and I propose to bring that leadership.
Back to you, Mike Cody. Go ahead.
Mr. LaMontagne, you and Ms. Hassan disagree on some social issues. Tell me about how much of an impact that would have on the economy and business. Are they relevant here?
I really don't think that relevant at all for this election cycle. Again, as I travel around the state, the focus is jobs, the economy, reforming state government. And that has to be the primary focus now in these times. These are critical times in New Hampshire as well as in this country, where we need leadership that understands that jobs are created in the private sector and what it takes to create that environment for job creation here in New Hampshire. That's the primary focus. That's what my campaign's been about from the very beginning, and that's what it will continue to be as we go forward in this general election.
Okay, and thanks, Mr. LaMontagne. And over to you, Phil Vaughn, with a question for, again, Mr. LaMontagne.
Mr. LaMontagne, the next governor will need to decide whether to expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. Would you support this as governor?
Phil, this is where my position is. I've been outside general counsel to a major hospital in New Hampshire, Catholic Medical Center. I know the healthcare field. I've seen the impact of the federal government on our current healthcare delivery system. I think what we should do as a state is go to the federal government to do a couple things. Number one, get a maintenance of effort waiver under Medicaid so we can have more flexibility there. Number two, demand that the federal government block grant the enhanced dollars that would be paid under the Affordable Care Act to our state and allow us to create a high-risk pool working with a private insurance exchange program, not taking additional lives in New Hampshire and bringing them into a Medicaid system that's not designed for healthy individuals. It's designed for individuals with special needs, poor women and children, and elderly citizens that don't have access to health care. Medicaid is a particularized insurance plan, should not be used as the vehicle to bring in uninsured lives currently. So the Affordable Care Act, I think, is the wrong direction. But clearly, there's a way we can work with the federal government to make a New Hampshire solution to health care reform happen here.
So don't expand Medicaid.
Don't expand Medicaid, that's right. But work with the federal government to have a New Hampshire-based solution to our challenges.
It is predicted that over the next 10 years, an additional 50,000 recipients would be enrolled in Medicaid in the state. If they aren't, will those costs then be passed on to businesses?
Well, they might be. There's going to be a tax, obviously, assessed, and that's what it's been called now, a tax under the Affordable Care Act for those employers that don't offer an insurance plan. So this is a cost. This is a job-killing program, this Affordable Care Act. It also takes $750 billion, with a B, of Medicaid money, Medicare money, from our system. It's the wrong direction to go, but there's flexibility now because the Supreme Court has said we don't have to go this way. We don't have to be compelled to use Medicaid as the expansion method. We can actually opt out, or we can use that position to leverage our negotiating position with the federal government to have a New Hampshire-based solution, and that's what I would strive for as governor.
If I could just jump in real quick, I think the concern among some businesses, as we've heard, is that if the 50,000 folks remain uninsured, then their costs of coming to the emergency room or whatever are shifted onto businesses and those of us who pay full freight. So I think that's the cost concern that you hear from some folks.
Well, that is the current situation. I mean, if there are 50,000 uninsured lives, the way they're getting health care is by going to the emergency room, and that's not acceptable. We need a New Hampshire-based solution, though, to bring them into the private insurance marketplace, and that's what we can do here in New Hampshire. But I do not subscribe to the belief that Washington should be telling us how to care for our patients, our citizens. We have a New Hampshire way to do it, and that's what I would bring as governor.
Ms. Hasson, same question for you. Would you expand Medicaid?
Well, first of all, it's really important that every Granite-Stater have access to quality and affordable health care, and that's a principle that every governor has to honor. I'm very concerned when I hear Ovid speak about his plan because it doesn't really give the full picture. In addition to saying he wants to block grant and privatize Medicaid, Ovid also wants to opt out of the federal Medicare system and give the New Hampshire legislature the power to provide and regulate health care for our seniors, something that I think would be a terrible mistake for our state. If for no other reason, just imagine what it would mean to a New Hampshire senior who goes down to Florida and is suddenly, you know, for the winter, not eligible for Medicare at a Florida hospital when they need care. So there's a real lack of practicality in Ovid's proposals. In terms of the Affordable Care Act, what we can do working with the federal government is expand the number of people covered by Medicaid. We need to find ways to increase our Medicaid reimbursement rates. They're too low in this state. But I worked very hard in the state Senate to make sure that we have transparency in healthcare financing so we can understand what's driving our underlying healthcare costs up. The other thing that I need to point out is that Ovid signed a pledge this week for Cornerstone Research Group, which is a pledge that he will promote some of the social issues he just said he wasn't going to pay any attention to as governor. But part of that pledge also says that he will work to completely deregulate private health insurance in the state of New Hampshire. That means no ability by the state, by consumers, to know that their health insurance plans under the kind of program he's talking about would cover things like mammograms or would cover very basic care like hearing aids. So there are real consequences to Ovid's plan that he's really not talking with people about, and we need to understand what they are.
And Phil, before you follow up with Ms. Hasson, Mr. Lamonte, I need to give you 30 seconds to rebut that. You support complete deregulation of our health care system in the state.
No, I don't. I don't know where that came from. I've been very consistent about where I stand on health care. It is a New Hampshire approach we need. And if to the extent we can have our programs designed here in New Hampshire, that's why we seek waivers for federal programs, and that's why we should have a New Hampshire approach. But I'm not sure what you're referring to. I'll tell you what, on our website you can find my health care position. It's much more detailed and actually works for New Hampshire. And that's the one I'll stand on, and it's at Ovid2012.com.
Okay. Ms. Hasson.
If I could, Ovid signed a pledge for Cornerstone Research, I think, this week. And when
no,
you
I
look
didn't.
At the agenda, well, it was
no,
announced
I did.
Yesterday. When you look at the agenda, it says that he would support deregulating insurance companies.
Okay,
instead.
And in this era of Google, maybe we
yeah.
can all
yeah, maybe
find
we'll
out,
find
out
that
more
says,
on that.
Yeah.
We'll leave that as it is for now. Go ahead, Phil. You've got another follow-up for Ms. Hasson.
Getting back to expansion of Medicaid, the government in the past has, well, the government says they will pay for all and part of it in the coming years. But in the past, the government has neglected or hasn't sent payments to the state. Is that a concern of yours? And if so, is New Hampshire on the hook for those costs?
First of all, there's always, you have to get back to the principle that it is more expensive not to insure people or cover people and get them good preventive and primary care than not to cover them. But I think the federal government has committed to 100% coverage of Medicaid expansion for the first 3 years. They have a real interest in doing that for a variety of reasons, including the fact that it will lower costs going forward. But the other thing is, if we fail to do this, there is a real cost as well, because the disproportionate share program that the federal government helps us with, the payments for the uninsured that they currently make, goes away under the Affordable Care Act. So if that payment goes away and we don't accept the Medicaid money, which we should do in a way that allows New Hampshire to chart its own course, we need to work with the federal government in ways to make sure that as we accept that Medicaid money, we're doing it in a way that's right. But I certainly wouldn't do what this legislature has done, which is reject federal money so that we could be planning to chart our own course under the Affordable Care Act. And I think it's really important for us to understand that there's a significant cost to our hospitals and medical providers for not participating in the Medicaid expansion.
All right. And Phil Vaughn, another question from you, please.
Ms. Hassan, New Hampshire calls itself a business-friendly state and yet has among the highest business taxes in the country. So isn't it important for you to lower business taxes or improve social services? Which one of those would you pick?
Well, what you have to do is focus on job creation and business development, because the best social program ever is a job, right? So what you need to look at, though, is our overall tax picture and overall tax climate. I'm very proud of the fact that serving with Governor Lynch in the worst economy since the Great Depression, we balanced a budget while keeping the overall tax burden in New Hampshire one of the lowest in the countries, rated by nonpartisan business groups as one of the friendliest places to do business in the country. So I'm very focused on preserving and improving that climate. What we know is that a recent ranking by CNBC of the states took us from 10th in the country to 34th in terms of our economic standing, and they pointed particularly to the cuts in our education system, to the university system. This legislature made a 50% cut to our university system, and to the infrastructure cuts, $90 million in cuts for our roads and our bridges. And those things are things that we absolutely need to find a way to invest in, or we're going to continue our economic decline. Those are things that this legislature, supported by Ovid, did, and that's what we need to make sure that we are focused on reinstating.
What do you think is more important, though, Ms. Hassan, reducing business taxes to help that business climate, or improving some of the social services that you say suffered under the Republican leadership?
Well,
can you pick one?
I think you can do both, and you have to, because businesses suffer when there are people who should be working and can't find jobs, and they can't find people to fill the jobs. So we have a real skill gap in this state. And when you talk to companies about what makes them come here, what attracts them to New Hampshire, they talk about our small and flexible and responsive government. They talk about the fact that we are willing to train workers for the jobs of tomorrow. Talk to folks at Albany International, who need about 400 high-skilled folks. We need to be investing in job training. I'm very proud of the fact that in the State Senate, I was one of the sponsors of our job training bill. That bill has created job training for 14,000 workers since we passed it.
Okay.
Those are the types of programs we need to be focused on.
Phil, back to you. Go ahead.
But is it really possible to reduce business tax?
Well, I think first of all, you have to look at what kind of economic growth you're having. It all starts with the economy. And you have to make sure that you have the platform and infrastructure possible so that businesses can create jobs. If we don't have safe roads and bridges, if we don't have broadband infrastructure, if we have, you know, this legislature passed the largest tax hike in the last decade by taxing hospitals, essentially, millions, hundreds of millions of dollars. If we don't have basic infrastructure in place, businesses can't flourish. And they know that, because when they talk to us, they talk about the fact that they'd like us to reinvest in infrastructure. They'd like us to help train workers for the 21st century. We've got people who need jobs and businesses who need workers and can't find them. That's the perfect role of partnering with businesses so they can create jobs and lead us economically.
Mr. LaMontagne, same question. Do you reduce business taxes or improve social services?
Well, first of all, it's not an either-or. question. And it's not an either-or scenario. Actually, you can do both, and you must do both. We shouldn't be just business-friendly. We should be the best state in the country to do business. And we begin by looking at our business profits tax structure, our business enterprise tax. My Easy Plan lowers our business profits tax from 8.5 to 8% over the course of 2 years, puts in credits for job creation, production job creation tax credits, which Maggie opposed when she was a state senator. It actually continues and definitely the BET tax credit against the BPT, which she opposed in the state Senate. And actually, she's proposed suspending that BET tax credit against the BPT in 2009 at the depths of the recession, which would have raised $80 million from business at exactly the wrong time. There's a fundamental choice here, and there's a fundamental difference in approach. We're going to support social services by reforming state government and making it more efficient, bringing us into the modern age, for example, in information technology. We're in a platform that's outdated. Frankly, it's outdated by a lot. If we move quickly to modernize our information technology system, I'm told we could save $100 to $300 million a year just simply in bureaucratic costs. There is plenty of opportunity in reforming our state government in order to fund the needs that we have while addressing the business tax structure.
And before you go on ahead, Phil, with your other question, Ms. Hassan, I'll give you 30 seconds to respond to the charge that you made exactly the wrong choices at exactly the wrong time in terms of taxes. 30 seconds, please.
Well, what we did is we balanced the budget in a very tough economic time, and we made tough choices. We worked with the business community, with the hospitality community on that budget. But what Ovid isn't telling us is the consequences of his cuts. We are down 23 state troopers in the state of New Hampshire because of this legislature's budget, this legislature that Ovid has supported. 23 state troopers down means that if you make a call in Jefferson, New Hampshire, for a response, it can take an hour for a public safety officer to respond. Our businesses need public safety. Our businesses need health inspections. Our businesses need a lot of the services that government provides so that they can attract people to our state and create jobs and drive the economy. So it's really important to think about the consequences of this plan.
Yeah, and we'll have time later on in our long-form segment to get into that. But I do need to give you again, Mr. Lamonte, now 30 seconds. Cuts, for example, in state troopers, there's an opinion that this is bad for business. People want that reliability.
Sure. Well, public safety isn't job one of government, isn't it? Making sure we have an ability to have safe neighborhoods and ability for business to flourish, and we're going to meet that need. But this weekend, Maggie was interviewed, and she proposed raising taxes in order to fund some of these things she's identifying. I say savings lies in reforming state government, and that's where we'll find the resources to fund those unmet needs.
Okay, and
you guys haven't proposed raising taxes.
15 seconds. Okay.
Your interview.
All right.
I haven't proposed raising taxes.
All right, and Phil Vaughn, you have a follow-up, please.
Yes, and in terms of, you took the pledge.
Yes.
Do you paint yourself into a corner fiscally?
Absolutely not. I'm a fourth-generation native. I was born with an anti-broad-based tax gene in my body, Phil. I wasn't a candidate for office who in 1 year set up for an income tax like Maggie did in 2002 and then run for governor and decide she's against an income tax or broad-based tax. It is not boxing yourself in the corner. It's promoting the New Hampshire advantage to tell the citizens that this is non-negotiable. We're going to work within the existing tax structure we have, within the existing delivery system. And I think that's what will make us exceptional going forward.
Okay, and Ms. Hassan, 15 seconds. In 2002, did you support an income tax?
I oppose an income or a sale tax. I would veto one as governor. I have kept that promise for 3 terms in the state Senate. I have moved forward, unlike Ovid, who is still trying to promote the same outdated ideas like kindergarten is bad that he did in 1996.
All right. And we're going to go now to Mike Cody from the Union Leader. Back to you, Mike.
Mr. LaMontagne.
Hi, Mike.
This is a question from an NHPR listener. As Ms. Hassan noted earlier, the New Hampshire legislature last year voted to cut state funding for the university system by almost 50%, the deepest to higher education, not only here but in the country ever. What's your position on state funding for higher education in general and the university system in particular?
Right. Well, first of all, they made a decision in the last legislative cycle to prioritize funding, for example, for individuals with disabilities as opposed to funding or creating more funding for the state university system. I think we need to continue to look at reforming our delivery system there. It's still too bureaucratic. There are a lot of opportunities, I think, working with our leadership at the university system level. On the other hand, I think that to the extent we're augmenting dollars from the state, it should go for tuition support to provide access to students who are of moderate means. And that should be the priority, not funding more bureaucracy. And that would be my focus. I will try to restore the funding that we've had. People should know that, you know, essentially New Hampshire went from 8.8% funding from the state to 4% in the last budget cycle. So it's not like we've taken half of the money over the entire budget. It's a relatively small percentage. It's significant. But we have to prioritize our spending, and then what we need to do is target those resources to provide tuition support to our students.
New Hampshire students are graduating with the highest debt loads in the nation from student loans. What do you say to families whose children want to go to school?
Well, that's why we've put into my EASY plan a tax credit for any employer who pays part or all of a student loan to help with that process. I also support renewing and restarting the UNIQUE program so that families have a chance to invest and plan for tuition payments for their children. In the end, we need to work together to come up with the best delivery system possible so that our students graduate from high school ready to move on to higher education, whether it's at the two-year college level or at the four-year degree program. And we need a comprehensive approach on that.
And Mr. LaMontagne, just to clarify before we go back to you, Mike, so would you try to restore that $50 million or not?
I would try, but it, again, in light of the other priorities that are called for in the next budget cycle.
Okay, back to you, Mike Cody.
Ms. Hassan, what's your position on this issue?
Well, certainly Ovid's going to have difficulty restoring $50 million with all of the other things he has in his agenda, because he keeps talking about further cuts as opposed to further investments. I would restore as much as possible the $50 million in conjunction with the university system freezing its tuition, because I do believe that tuition matters. There's no substitute for affordable tuition at a really good public college, university, or community college. And that is something that we really have to focus on. We are losing students from New Hampshire to Massachusetts in particular because their tuition out of state in some places has become more affordable for our families than our own in-state tuition. That's unacceptable. It also means that once we lose those young people to other states, they don't come back here to find jobs and to start families. So we really need to focus on this. It is absolutely a priority because it's also important that we work with our university system to tap their expertise to help our businesses. We want their expertise in marketing. We want their technological and innovation expertise. We want to take things like the Green Launching Pad and develop it into an innovation launching pad. We need to help our companies learn how to export more, work more with international trade. We need to create more and more job training programs in partnership with business. And we need to focus on targeted tax credits, things like the research and development tax credit, that bring businesses to our state to really, they're really on the cusp of starting new industries. That's the type of focus that we should be bringing to the entire education system, because when we do that, when we partner with our educators, we will have the right kind of workforce. It'll be the best workforce in the nation.
Now, how would you restore that funding? It's $50 million.
Well, you start by looking at some of the bad decisions that this legislature made. And you start, for instance, by looking at the cigarette tax that they cut. And you can look at reversing some of those bad decisions and restoring money that way. You look at the fact that they laid off about 30% of the auditors in the Department of Revenue. That means we've lost somewhere in the neighborhood of $15 to $20 million in revenues just this year because we don't have a collection system that is fair and complete. And if you look at those things, and if you look at the growth we're seeing in the BPT revenues, and you look at perhaps one high-end, highly regulated casino that might be able to bring us between $60 or $80 million of revenue, you begin to have the revenues to be able to do that. This is an ongoing step-by-step process. It's not easy. What this legislature has done devastated this state, and it is going to take time and effort and partnership and collaboration to bring us back, but we can.
All right, Ms. Hassan, thank you. And we're going to wrap up that segment of our forum. We now move on to the next portion of our forum, the lightning round. Now, this is where we ask a straightforward question that should be answered quickly and decisively, as in yes or no. Our congressional candidates struggled with this. Let's see how the gubernatorial candidates do. We have tightened the rules to assist them. So 10 seconds, please. And our first lightning round question comes from Phil Vaughn.
Mr. LaMontagne, is your economic philosophy, or if your economic philosophy could be found in a fortune cookie, what would it say?
Prosperity.
Ms. Hassan, same question.
Oh, it would mean we help businesses innovate and create jobs. We do that through targeted tax credits and education.
Ms. Hassan, would you eliminate the 10-cent cut on cigarette tax?
Yes.
Same question.
I don't believe in tax increases. No.
Mr. LaMontagne, Maine just raised tolls on its highways. As governor, would you pledge not to raise tolls in New Hampshire?
Yes.
Ms. Hassan.
We need to find a way to complete I-93 and our transportation infrastructure. Not sure tolls is the way to do it, but we need to have a discussion about how we're going to fund our transportation infrastructure.
Another question for you, Ms. Hassan. Should the state pension system change from a traditional defined benefit plan to a 401k style system?
No, because it would cost the taxpayers of this state millions and millions of additional dollars, and it's a bad idea and a risky idea.
Mr. LaMontagne.
We should move from a defined benefit plan to a defined contribution plan like the private sector has done for new employees and move to reform our pension system. Yes.
Doing great so far. Phil Vaughn, back to you.
Mr. LaMontagne, should New Hampshire liquor stores be allowed to sell beer?
No. I preserve the status quo.
Okay, same question.
Same answer. We agree on that.
Ms. Hassan, would you oppose the Northern Pass project if it proves too costly to bury the power lines?
If it proves too costly to bury the power lines and we can't get community support for another proposal, yes.
We need to look at what the actual cost benefits are of the project. It should be buried, and that's what I'm looking for in the next proposal.
Mr. LaMontagne.
Yes.
Do you support the regional greenhouse gas initiative known as REGGIE?
No, we should repeal REGGIE.
Ms. Hassan.
I was proud to be a sponsor of that tax, the energy efficiency program, because it has saved businesses millions and millions of dollars and created over 400 jobs.
Another one for Ms. Hassan. Who is one business leader you admire?
Oh, wow. Joe Marone at Albany International.
Mr. LaMontagne.
Marion Narona of TurboCam, who's an immigrant to the United States, came here with a passbook and $5 and now employs 350 plus people in a company that he built. No one else built that.
Mr. LaMontagne, would you sign or veto legislation making New Hampshire a right-to-work state?
I would actively support it and sign it. This is an important initiative for us here in New Hampshire. Employee freedom of choice.
Ms. Hassan?
I don't think the government should interfere with contracts between employees and businesses, and so I oppose right to work. It will drive our standard of living down, and it will hurt our middle-class families.
And Ms. Hassan, would New Hampshire's gas taxes haven't been raised since the 1990s. Would you veto any increase?
Again, it's really important that we find ways to fund our transportation infrastructure. This legislature cut $90 million from that. I-93 needs to be completed. We have businesses waiting to start in that part of the state that can't because of what this legislature has done. Environmental permits are running out as we speak, so we need to find a way to fund it. Don't know that the gas tax is the best way to do that, but we need to have a discussion.
So possibly on the table.
Possibly. But again, we need to have a discussion about it. Gas is really high right now.
This is not the time to raise taxes, including the gas tax.
I want to give a big cheer for these candidates making it through that lightning round.
Well done. Well done.
Well done.
Yeah, that's right.
Thank you very much for that. And we're now going to switch gears for a longer form, moderate discussion, where I ask the candidates one broad question and encourage them then to face each other, get a dialogue going on this question, and we'll see where it takes us. I'll jump in only as necessary to make sure we're not going too far astray in terms of the topic or in terms of the time. And the question is, The decade of the 2000s has often been called the lost decade, with stagnant economy and low wage growth for the middle class. So my question is, what is the state's responsibility to the middle class in these times? Now, Mr. LaMontagne, I'm going to start with you. I want to give you a minute to kind of ponder this question, then Ms. Hassan a minute, and then I really do encourage you to just face each other and talk about what responsibility, if any, the state has to help out the middle class. And Mr. LaMontagne, go ahead. You have a minute.
Well, thank you, Laura. I think it's a very good question, and it really underscores what's happened over the last decade. As a percentage of gross domestic product here in New Hampshire, the state share taken from taxpayers has increased well beyond the national average. We've seen government grow too far and too fast. And as a result, for New Hampshire families, particularly the middle class, there has been a squeeze from business in terms of the pressure on business and a squeeze on their jobs. And economic prosperity is the future to supporting the middle class, which means government has to create that environment for competition to occur, for new businesses to be created, for new opportunities for our citizens. And that has to be the focus going forward. I refuse to let New Hampshire be part of the national decline that we're seeing currently. As a result of the Great Recession, we're still 30,000 jobs short in New Hampshire from where we were in 2008. That is unacceptable. And our unemployment rate masks the real pain in the North Country and throughout our state. New Hampshire does not have an economic development plan. We need to have that very quickly, and one that looks at the regional assets of our state. And then we need to brand the state. I want to be an ambassador in chief for New Hampshire to let the world know that we're open for business. And if it comes to Canadian trade, I'll go to Canada. I'll speak in their language to let them know they should be in New Hampshire, not Maine.
Well, with a name like LaMontagne, I would certainly hope so. Ms. Hassan, 1 minute, and then I encourage you both to talk about your vision for government and the middle class.
Sure. Well, the Great Recession has been a terrible thing for the middle class. And one of my concerns and one of the things I hope people will think about and listen to is much of what Ovid is talking about with his agenda is a return to the very economic policies that brought on the Great Recession. We need to make sure that our middle class families have opportunity so that they can compete. That's why I'm running for governor. New Hampshire had this great way of including my son, for instance, who has disabilities, in our public education system, in our neighborhoods. That's the kind of inclusion, everybody being at the table, everybody participating, that's so critical to our future. So we need to have a strong public education system. Ovid's voucher plan that was passed by this legislature over the governor's veto is diverting millions of dollars from our public education system, while Manchester has as many as 40 kids in a classroom, to private and religious schools. That doesn't help our middle class families. We need to make sure that our middle class families can afford UNH and other state system schools. Right now, that 50% cut is making that harder and harder. That was a huge tuition increase. That should matter. What we need to do is just give people the tools to compete and work, and they will do that. But that's also why it's so important to preserve the ability of workers to negotiate with their employers. The state shouldn't interfere with that relationship, which is what Right to Work does. And so those are the types of things we need to be focused on, how to make sure every family, no matter what its challenges, has opportunities. If we do that, this state, as it always has done, will take off.
That's interesting. Both of you are describing government creating an ecosystem where the middle class can flourish, but different ideas about what makes that ecosystem healthy. Go ahead, Ms. LaMontagne, kick it off, but then I encourage you guys to just dialogue
well,
about it.
Go ahead. I don't know what you've experienced on the campaign trail, but I see sense a lot of anxiety, particularly among the workers when I visit a business, mm-hmm. about their future. And they're concerned about whether or not they're going to have a job next week and next month. I mean, do you experience the same thing?
Of course I do. And they're also very, very worried about whether their kids are going to be able to afford to go to UNH. They're worried about whether they can afford or their employers can afford health insurance. So one of the things that is of great concern is what you do if you want to deregulate health insurance, what it's going to mean to families that actually have illnesses that a private insurer can decide on whim they're just not going to cover. But the anxiety I sense is about the entire ability for the next generation to move ahead. And that ability You can't have the best workforce in the nation if it isn't a healthy workforce. You can't have people compete for jobs that employers need if they don't have access to an education system with strong math and science standards. Those are the things that I hear. I hear from a woman in Londonderry.
Let me tell you what I hear. I'm giving you a chance to talk now. How much more time do we have?
Can I just finish my sentence? So the woman in Londonderry who says to me when she first moved here, there wasn't public kindergarten. She had to drive her child to Massachusetts to find public kindergarten because there weren't any options in her part of the state by the time she moved here. Now she's worried about that same child's tuition at UNH. That's what I hear in diners and retail stops along the way.
Yeah, but I also hear the people in the small business particularly, they're trying to start a business or trying to grow their business, and they were crushed by the LLC tax that you supported, an additional burden on their growth. They're concerned about the regulatory environment when regulators come in and try to interrupt what they're doing. And the people working there see what's happening. It's not just the business owners we're talking about. It's the workers in the manufacturing businesses of our state that have, you know, perhaps just a high school degree, but they have the power of their and the courage of their convictions to make a go of it in our society. They want freedom and liberty, Maggie, to realize the American dream through the New Hampshire venue. And I'm concerned that we're not giving them the fair chance, a fighting chance, as middle Americans, as small families, as people working in our state, to be able to realize that American dream, because we are out of control. And New Hampshire needs leadership. And the fact that these individuals get, that our citizens get up every day wondering whether or not the bottom's going to fall out today on them is not fair to them, and it deprives them of realizing not only that American dream, but making sure that the next generation is going to have the educational system that they should be entitled to, whether it's homeschooling. Your family's fortunate. You've had family experience at Phillips Exeter Academy. It's a wonderful school, but it's not a public school, and I want every child to experience what I did when I went to St. Paul's School Advanced Studies Program. They took high school students from the public schools as well as the Catholic schools and gave us the experience of what a boarding school experience was like in the summertime. I want that for every child. That's why I support choice, and that's going to empower our children to realize the things that they only aspire to, but they can actually get there. Because
if
we
could jump in here too, and I apologize. I want to ask you both about a headline that came out yesterday. It kind of relates to my question about the middle class, government's role, and so forth. Mitt Romney's campaign, as you both know, has been struggling with the release yesterday of a videotape where he commented that there's 47% of Americans who, in his words, see themselves as victims, who deserve handouts. Now, this has sparked a lot of discussion about the government's role in our lives, what we deserve, what we don't. Maybe to you, Ms. Hassan, since Mr. LaMontagne finished that last little bit, are too many Americans, including the middle class, dependent on government to make their lives better?
Well, I want that family that Ovid was just talking about to do more than wonder when they get up in the morning. I want them to be able to go to our community college and get retrained the way a worker who was laid off when Isaacson Steel closed up in Berlin told me he was going to White Mountain Community College. That takes some help from the state government. And the legislature that you supported, the Tea Party legislature, and you said you're the Tea Party favorite candidate, cut the community college system budget. You can't have it both ways. If you want a vibrant system, a vibrant place so that our people can show what they're made of, which is this is the strongest, best workforce, best work ethic anywhere in the country. They have to have that kind of opportunity. That's our job. To Laura's question, of course, more and more people aren't paying federal income tax. Why? Because of the Great Recession and the income gap in this country, and because people have fewer and fewer opportunities to go to a place like a community college or afford a tuition at the university system so that they can better themselves and afford and make more money because they get the kind of job training that the Albany Internationals of the world, the new companies, the next generation of business needs. That's what I'm committed to. I just wanted to say a couple other things.
And let him jump into Ms. Hassan.
He made a couple of comments, and one of them, and Maggie didn't, right? Well, they were. I just wanted to say that when we talk about the LLC tax, it was designed with the support of the BIA to do a particular thing, which it didn't do, so we repealed it. And I think that shows people that I look at facts, I make the best decisions possible, I move forward, and it's really important that we have a governor who will look at facts. It's not going to help our our folks if we are peddling ideas from 16, 20 years ago.
And they'll have a governor, if I'm the governor, Maggie, that will not only look at the facts but apply common sense approach that's based on freedom, liberty, conservative approach to limited government and fiscal responsibility, not the kind of government that we suffered under, frankly, under your leadership in the state. And so there's a real choice here. And the reference of the Tea Party, I know, I'm not sure what that's supposed to mean. Ask the board members at CASA, the Easter Seals, the Boy Scouts, and other organizations that I've worked with, whether or not they think that works for them in terms of trying to label me. But when it comes to the question that was asked, I've been very clear from the very beginning. I've been criticized for it in our primary. I want to be the governor for all the people. That's why I'm saying to people, I'll check my party label at the State House door. And I'll go in there and do the work of the people. Whoever comes to me with a problem or a solution, I don't care whether they're libertarians, Democrats, Republicans, or independents, they'll have a place at the table. And people who know me in business, in the civic and charitable world, in politics, know that I can work across the aisle, and I will. And it won't be a partisan government. The governor of New Hampshire needs to be a governor for all the people. And there's no 47% in New Hampshire, as far as I'm concerned. Every citizen deserves to have a responsible government, one that understands the limits of the Constitution and the power of the free markets and can lead us into a new era of prosperity, and I'll be that governor given
a
chance.
And 15 seconds, and then we're going to wrap up
right,
this segment.
I have a record of reaching across the aisle, but you can't be the governor for everybody in New Hampshire if you deny a woman a right to make her own health care decisions and chart her own future, or if you deny people.
It's an economic issue.
But it's the law of the land, and as a governor of New Hampshire, I'll be duty-bound to enforce the law of the land, and I will.
And if a bill comes to your desk to ban abortion, you won't sign
this? It's not coming to my desk to ban abortion. The law of the land provides for abortion.
All right.
It's not changing.
Form on business and the economy, but when you come on my program, The Exchange, later on, I'm sure we'll be talking about that. Thank you very much for that segment. Real interesting stuff. And I want to turn now to our final segment. This is where we return to our panelists for a few final questions. Now, for this segment, you will have 2 minutes to answer, and if there's a follow-up, 1 minute for that. So first, we're going to turn to Phil Vaughn with a question for Mr. Lamontagne. Go ahead, Phil.
Mr. Lamontagne, does the Exeter Hospital hepatitis C outbreak show a need for additional state regulation or oversight?
It shows a need for a national database that enables the various states of our country to know when they're not an itinerant worker. This is what we had. We had a fellow who was working in a number of states that we know what the true background is of this person before they're hired locally. And that's really where I think the failure came. Now, I don't know the extent to which the response was either delayed or not, and who knew when. But I do know that there was a failure of the information processing, that we should have had notice in New Hampshire of this person's background in other states and apparently some real threats that existed that we weren't aware of. This is why we need to work with other states and develop the kind of information flow that we will need to assure the quality of our healthcare system going forward.
Did the Exeter Hospital live up to its responsibilities to the community during the crisis?
Well, it seems like I don't know the answer to the, I don't know the end of the story, frankly. We still haven't heard all the details, but I commend them for taking the responsibility that they have to test all their patients, to work with the state collaboratively. There's no suggestion that I'm aware of. It just is a tragedy, a terrible thing that happened in our state, and we should learn from it. And instead of looking backwards about it, we should learn how to avoid this going forward to protect the integrity of our healthcare delivery system for all of our citizens.
Ms. Hassan, the same question. You live in Exeter. Does the crisis show a need for more oversight and regulation?
Well, I do live in Exeter, and it has been a devastating situation for so many people in our area of the state, and my heart goes out to the families and the victims of this terrible crime, and it really was a crime. I also have experience as a business lawyer and particularly as in-house counsel for a major teaching hospital where I practiced for 3 years. So this issue is very near and dear to me, and I understand the complexity of it, but we do need to make sure that as a state, we have a system working with other states to keep track of healthcare workers and their records. I think that's critical. I also think our Department of Public Health needs to have the resources to make sure that they are doing the kind of training with hospitals to make sure that we are doing everything we can to protect patients in all aspects of their care. And that requires, you know, a modern public health system and a modern public health department with appropriate resources. And again, you know, you can't shortchange safety.
Do you believe that Exeter Hospital lived up to its responsibilities?
Again, we don't know all of the facts yet, and there's a lot of litigation going on about it, but I think it's really important that our hospitals are as transparent as they can be about the way they provide care, but also about the way they investigate all aspects of medical mistakes or wrongdoing in their facilities.
And before we go to Mike Cody, one quick question for you. Mr. LaMontagne, you first, and I'll give you 2 minutes to respond to this
okay.
if you'd like. What about the State Department of Health and Human Services? There was some criticism about how it handled the response to this Exeter Hospital tragedy.
Again, we don't know all the facts, and having practiced law for 14 years as outside general counsel to a major hospital, it's complicated the way you deal with issues like this. And I believe, however, that at this point we have a case study that can help us improve the system we have in place in New Hampshire for people coming to our state to work as professional healthcare providers, and then to move forward with a rapid response to identify the patients that were served or affected here. This should be a template for moving forward, and I think we can have an opportunity to do that. Health and Human Services, I think, was caught flat-footed in terms of a communications plan, if nothing else.
Yeah, there was some confusion about who
Absolutely.
Should be tested, and how many.
Yeah, and that's not acceptable. But I think, again, rather than going back and just being critical, learn from that so that we have a rapid response program in place for this sort of an incident, which is very serious. The last thing you want to do is shake the confidence of the citizens in the healthcare delivery system that we have here in our state. It's not good for them. It's not good for business. It's not good for the state as a whole.
Yeah, very scary times for those folks. Ms. Hassan, quickly to you, to the State Department of Health and Human Services. Flat-footed or not?
Again, still wanting to find out more about what particularly happened, but let's realize that the Department of Health and Human Services, along with our hospitals, have been decimated by budget cuts that this legislature put in place. The largest tax in our state's history was put in place by a Republican legislature, which is essentially taxing our hospitals right now to the tune of $200 to $300 million.
But there's no suggestion
that has made it difficult for all of our healthcare professionals and our entire healthcare system to provide the kind of healthcare that our citizens deserve. And they certainly deserve Department of Health and Human Services with a public safety, public health branch in it that is capable of rapid response, capable of helping figure out exactly who needs to be tested when, and capable of communicating with the public in a very vigorous way.
So, Wayne, I know you want to jump in, Mr. LaMontagne.
Yes.
My question, though, is are you connecting the dots here, Ms. Hassan? Are you saying an underfunded Department of Health and Human Services, a stressed and perhaps underfunded hospital helped make this happen? Is that what you're saying?
Or? Oh, they didn't commit the crime.
No, but
in terms of the capacity,
financial stress.
In terms of the capacity to respond quickly to things, you do need to have people who have in their charge not only the duty and job description to work with hospitals and make sure that they're safe, but you also have to have enough people within the provider community as well as the health and human services community to do the work that comes about when you have this kind of crisis. And it's a very labor-intensive thing.
I
just think it's important to understand that it is easy to criticize state workers. It is easy to criticize healthcare facilities, but if they are not resourced at a level that allows them to do their job, we all bear some of the responsibility for
that. Okay, 30 seconds to Mr. LaMontagne. Can you connect the dots between underfunding at HHS and the flat-footed response that you described?
It's absolutely irresponsible for you as a healthcare lawyer, someone who's practicing healthcare, to connect the dots like you just did. Now, you've tried to step away from it. This is a serious health issue facing our state, and to suggest to any extent that the response of HHS was a function of underfunding or anything else is irresponsible. It's a classic politicizing of a significant issue. Leadership requires discipline, focus, and truth. And as far as I'm concerned, the jury is still out as to what happened here. But the response by HHS, there's no suggestion that it was flat-footed or late or in any way because it was underfunded. And that is, again, a reckless statement to make, and I take offense to it as a citizen of New Hampshire. We have to assure the people of New Hampshire that we do have, in fact, a delivery system that will work for them and that's responding to this issue.
15 seconds and then we'll move on.
Of course we do, but it is reckless for anyone to suggest that you can just keep cutting with no consequences to our entire healthcare system. We have people in the state who aren't getting care because of the cuts this legislature
made.
All right,
and we're going to go to my colleague, Mike Cody. Go ahead, Mike.
Ms. Hassan, the liquor stores in New Hampshire are state-owned, contributing about $100 million to the state every year. What changes would you make to improve operations and increase revenue?
And by the way, you have about a minute for this one.
Well, certainly we took some steps to modernize the liquor system when we were the liquor commission and the liquor stores when we were in the legislature. We worked to depoliticize the system and revenues have come back up. So I think I'm still interested, as I was in the legislature, in whether we should restructure some of the administration of the liquor commission. I'm not sure a three-commission panel is the best way to go at it. But we need to continue to make sure that the liquor commission has the ability to operate like a business. But we also need to make sure that we have the right kind of oversight so that some of the questions that we're seeing about the liquor commission right now are rectified, because we certainly, as is true with any business, can't support illegal or corrupt behavior by any administrators or officials at the Liquor Commission.
Mr. LaMontagne.
Clearly, this is an important function that state government has taken on, for better or for worse. It's an important revenue driver in New Hampshire, and we need to have it run like a business. And so you don't put three CEOs at the head of a business like this. It should be one commissioner. It should be a streamlined system so that there's accountability. The buck stops with some one person. And ultimately, we need more controls, it looks like, in place. The move to put this into more of an enterprise fund apparently has allowed for some real gaps and problems. And so we need to look at the delivery system yet again.
I have one last question for you, and it's kind of a fun one, so we'll end with that. Both of you are business lawyers, but if you could start over, and Mr. LaMontagne, I'll start with you. If you could start your career over and open up your own kind of business, what kind of business would it be?
Well, I actually did open a business when I started my career. I was a teacher at in high school social studies teacher, and my wife Betty related the story the other night that early in our marriage she decided to defrost the freezer using an ice pick and realized that the ice pick and the freezer don't go together. And as a consequence of that, I started doing a side job in construction with the guidance counselor. We formed a little business called S&O Construction. And if I were to do it again, I'd be a contractor. I love working with my hands, and but I do have some experience with it, too.
Ms. Hassan, you too, real quickly, please.
Oh, I would either open a gym or I would raise dogs. When in doubt, get a dog, right?
So a dog grooming business or
anything having to do with animals, walking them. I start every day with a dog, with walking my dog in the woods, and it's one of the best parts of the day. And I just have always loved working with animals. I've always also just loved exercising and bringing people together to feel good about themselves.
Well, Donna Sitek once said, working with the legislature is like herding cats. So maybe that's some experience you can draw. That's all the time we have for this forum. It's been great. I really want to thank you, our audience, for joining us here at the New Hampshire Institute of Politics and Political Library at St. Anselm College. To you at home for watching and listening. And especially thank you to our well-behaved candidates who stayed on target, on time, Republican Ovid LaMontagne and Democrat Maggie Hassan. You can listen and watch all of the forums here at our website, nhpr.org, and at nhptv.org. Thank you.
This forum on business and the economy has been sponsored by Lincoln Financial Group and produced in partnership with the Business and Industry Association of New Hampshire, New Hampshire Union Leader, New Hampshire Public Radio, and New Hampshire Public Television.